I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. The suspects in the Boston Marathon bombings have been identified as ethnic Chechen immigrants. So you might be wondering, what, if anything, does that have to do with any alleged behavior that they were participating in? We'll find out more about Chechnya's history and politics in just a few minutes. But first, we want to take a look at the role social media has played in the investigation and coverage of the Boston Marathon bombings. Both the Boston FBI and the Boston Police Department have chosen Twitter as one of their main ways to communicate with the press and the public. But in addition to the useful information they gathered via these means, many Facebook pages, Twitter feeds, and comment sections of news stories have been littered with threats, slurs, and hate speech directed at Muslims or anybody with a perceived connection to the suspects. And a lot of that was happening even before they were identified. We wanted to talk more about what this might mean. So we've called Michael Skolnick. He's the editor-in-chief of GlobalGrind.com. That's a news and entertainment site founded by Russell Simmons. He tweeted about the bombings more than 400 times last week and talked about some of this kind of content. Also joining us, Roy Junco. He's a faculty associate at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. And we often call upon him to talk about some of the trends on social media. Welcome back to you both. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Michelle. Great to be here.
Michael, what have you seen on your site? I know that you talked about the kind of the vitriol and hatred you were seeing on other sites, but what about on your own site?
I think that anytime during situations like this where there are folks involved who have been targeted in the past, especially in this country, we see some of the nastiness and some of the worst part of those who live in this country and across this world. And our site, we didn't see so much hate. We saw a lot of confusion, a lot of answers. Most folks had never even heard of Chechnya and wanted to know where Chechnya was and what happens in Chechnya and who the Chechens are and what the history of Chechnya is. So we did a lot of explanation, a lot of explaining to folks. But I think for the most part, young people that I saw across the board wanted answers and certainly went to social media and went to the blogs and went to the internet to get answers because they weren't getting them from traditional media.
Roy Junco, what about that? I mean, the comment sections, I think I can say this based on personal experience, the comment sections of a lot of news sites are often a place where people want to go to deliver nasty, you know, messages about anything. And so I wanted to ask if the kind of comments that you saw in the wake of the bombing were in fact unusual, or was there another level to them?
Well, I see it as something that happens, you know, generally online. I think right after a traumatic event is a perfect time for the trolls to come out. So this is, you know, people are disgusted, sick, sad, mourning, they're shocked. Trolling would get an even bigger rise out of people, and I think that certainly plays a role after such an event. I think also, you know, separate from trolling but related is that it can be a way to get attention, that, you know, there's a stark contrast between posting a hateful comment and what most people are posting. And I think that we've talked about this before on the show, that online there's a barrier between the communicator and everybody else. It's called the online disinhibition effect. So people are able to vent and get catharsis without an immediate physical response. Like in face-to-face situations, we often get, to use an operant conditioning term, punished when we vent inappropriate statements. Online, the opposite may occur. The person who is likely to post a hate speech experiences an echo chamber where they get others with similar beliefs who are following them or reading their comments to support their message.
And when you say trolls, could you just clarify that for people who haven't heard that term before?
Sure. And trolls and trolling is basically getting a rise out of people, people who go online and really just want to get a reaction from people. They really are not connected to their own sense of empathy and are really just looking to make people upset or angry.
And I have to ask, though, because, you know, in the real world, in real life, people you just generally can't in your life go around just saying mean things for no reason to people,
right,
without getting some kind of reaction. Do you think that trolling is a significant part of why some people are online to begin with, because they just want to vent for whatever reason, or that this is how they want to express themselves and they enjoy it?
I think there's a minority of the online population that is online to do that.
Okay. Michael, at one point, you sent a tweet that identified a pair of carjackers believed to have been the Chechnya brothers as Middle Eastern suspects who are armed. Even though you put Middle Eastern in quotes, Tell me about what goes into a decision like that.
That was a quote directly from the police scanner. That's what they were saying over. So that was a quote directly from the police. The carjacking victim had said that to the police. A lot of folks have said the carjacking victim hasn't spoken. He spoke to the police right after he was carjacked. I think what was interesting, Michelle, was that that night I was awake and I saw on Twitter that there was a shooting at MIT campus. And I turned on all the traditional network news and nobody was covering it. For 45 minutes, no one had anything live from the scene. And all that we had was police scanners, folks, you know, on Twitter, students at MIT. And so we are gathering pieces of information. It was first a shooting at MIT, then there's a 7-Eleven possible robbery, then there's a carjacking victim, then there was a going to a DoubleTree hotel, then they were going to New York, then there was a stolen SUV, and then there was shots fired, grenades, explosives in Watertown. And this was before any network news had even was starting covering it. So we were just getting pieces of information, trying to piece it together. So that Middle Eastern term came up over the police scanner. I certainly want to say it didn't come from me because I didn't see the two gentlemen.
But what I think what you're saying, though, what you're pointing out is in a lot of ways we're experiencing these events in real time. And so that can – people are giving the information that they have essentially without a filter, and that has its pluses and its minuses.
Absolutely. So. If you look at the Boston Globe, who did an incredible job of covering this event, their Friday paper is already printed. And what do you do when the Boston Globe – they were the ones who broke that these two guys were actually the ones who they were looking for, actually the Marathon bombing suspects. And what do you do when your paper is already printed? You go online, and you have to put something online immediately because folks are reading at 4 o'clock in the morning. We were up all night tweeting and Facebooking and putting on our website. They wanted information in real time. When I was watching the news, they were 15, 20 minutes behind on Friday night when they're getting the guy. So Twitter served as a purpose to give everyone information as it was happening.
And right to the point of this whole question of the kinds of messages that people are giving out and the concerns that they have about them. I mean, the fact is that we also talked about this in this program. We're all aware of the misinformation that made it into the traditional media, including a newspaper who identified the wrong people as suspects more than once. And the other thing that people have pointed out is that people often use the same social media tools that they're using to spread vitriol to counteract those messages, and other people challenge them. Other people challenge the kinds of comments that are being. So when you look at all of that together, I'm asking you, Ray, what do you think the net effect is of that? Do you think that the net effect, what's the overall narrative that you get? Is it that people use it to vent, or that they use it to correct, or do they cancel each other out? Do you have a picture in the mind or a metaphor that you can give us about this?
My sense is the overall narrative is that people use it to connect and to engage with others in productive ways, and there are some people who use it to vent. I would say, you know, if I had to put a number to it, and please don't quote me on this because I haven't looked at the data, it would be almost impossible to look at the data, but I would say it's probably, you know, 80-20 or 90-10, that 80% or 90% are using social media for very productive purposes.
And the 10% you just looms large, or the 10 or 15% just looms large for whatever reason.
Well, sure. And you know, when we label it as venting, it could be anything from, you know, venting like, oh, wow, this, you know, this happened to me today, to the trolling that we're talking about. And I think that some of that venting can serve a purpose, not the trolling, but I think some of the venting can serve a purpose because then people can get support from others.
Well, I was thinking, and when I was using that term, I was thinking specifically about people who had kind of made these racist assumptions even before any credible information had been rendered about who was responsible for this,
sure.
including threats to whole groups of people, suggesting that, you know, a whole group of people ought to be, you know, hurt or harmed as a consequence. Michael, we only have about a minute left. Is there anything you learned from this as a kind of a avid practitioner of social media? I mean, you basically live on Twitter. I'm thankful you're here today, but that you've learned from this. Is there anything you'd do differently in the future?
I think there were some mistakes made on social media. As you said, there were mistakes made in traditional media as well. I think that is a learning lesson of how we move forward, of who wants to be first and how to get information first. But I think the positive thing, what I saw so many new people on Twitter who started following me, who had one follower, so you know they're new. They just wanted the information very quickly. This will be a day that we will remember, as media will drastically change in this country, and traditional media will have to figure out how to compete with real-time news.
Michael Skolnick is the editor-in-chief of GlobalGrind.com. That's a news and entertainment site founded by Russell Simmons. He joined us in our Washington, D.C. studios. You have what? How many Twitter followers? Like a million?
About
a million.
I have a lot. Follow me. Come check me out, and we'll have a good time on Twitter.
Ray, he was here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Ray Junco was with us. He's a faculty associate at the Harvard Berkman Center for Internet and Society. He was kind enough to join us on the phone from his office. Ray, thank you so much for joining us also.
Thank you, Michelle.